The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 461. On the podcast day, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, he talks about Andlas Energy, ADL, and the silence is deafening. I get several tweets every day. Direct messages and tweets saying, what's happening? When are they on the podcast? And I don't know if you know the story with Andlas, but we talk about that. And last week, I foolishly bet my house that they would relist, refloat by Friday, before the end of April, I said. And they still haven't relisted yet. That was last week. They've got 2 days left, so I may be homeless this time next week. Plus, he talks about tertiary minerals, and also we discuss John Walsh, the black cabbie driver, or trader, I should say, who won the IG Index Trading Championships, and he bagged himself $100,000. John will be on the podcast on Monday, talking about his trading technique. I also have full-time investor, writer, and ex-fund manager on the podcast today. First time, John Rosier. And we talk about lots of stocks, including EasyJet, Dixon Scarphone, Character Group, Crawshaw, Conviviality, etc. Plus, I have today's stock with potential, as suggested by Dave. I love the name Dave. Yeah, oh, Dave. And Dave suggests Red Emperor Resources. That's RMP. And they've got cash, which is always good for small cap. And also, I'll read out a cracking review from someone who was kind enough to take the time and effort to go to iTunes and give me a 5-star rating right there, which helps the search for this podcast. And I tell you what, the podcast is doing very well. Thank you for listening. If you do enjoy, get any value, you can do one of two things. You can either sort of, you know, give me a research review on iTunes, or recommend it to a friend. One friend. Even if you've got one friend, just say, listen, buddy, you're my friend. Have a listen to this. You may enjoy it. So I do appreciate that.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, it's the regular, it's the CEO of Brand Communications, it's Alan Green. You're right, Al?
I'm good, Just. How are you? Sun's shining brightly here. Lovely day down in down the south coast.
Yeah, it is nice. It's a little bit windy because I was on my bike this morning, but a little bit windy, but I always like a bright light, you know, it's very nice. And even this, I get up very early at the radio station I work at. I'm on the bike by about, what time? But 5 o'clock in the morning, and yep. It's starting to get light at that time now, which is very nice. And
I love these early mornings and long light evenings. Fantastic. A few hours of darkness and then on to the next day. It's fantastic.
Anyway, ignore the weather, ignore everything. Let's get on to some, you know, pressing, important issues. Andlas Energy, ADL. Now, I said last week, and I'm starting to regret this because we are coming to close to the deadline here, that I would actually, I said, some people are saying it won't relist. And I said, this is stupid. I'll bet my house on the fact it will relist, you know, before the end of April. And now we've got 2 days. Is it 2 days left? Is this 6-month deadline, is it, I think? What is it?
6-month deadline, yes, after which they have to reapply again or apply for an extension. But I don't believe that'll be granted in this case. Of course, it's very difficult. And if you're betting your house on Andlas, it's a pretty difficult time. And we've seen, of course, several detractors out there, several well-known detractors who are saying that the company is worth zilch and they're criminals and liars, all the rest of it, and I think we know where that's come from. But at the end of the day, there are some fundamental issues here which simply can't be ignored. Yes, the suspension's gone a long time. Yes, the company's had to raise more money. As we come up to the deadline, I think Dave Whitby so far has delivered on everything he's promised to deliver, other than a firm completion on the Tubrobe concession agreement. That is, of course, integral to the relisting of the company. My hope is that Dave ticks all the boxes again and does what he's always said he'll do all the way through, which is deliver on his promises, and that is company comes back, it's relisted, and he follows the Tubrobe concession agreement completion up with several developments on that, which will take the company forward. The second thing is, it is an indisputable fact that there are 250 million people living in Indonesia. There is an infrastructural shortage. There's a shortage of infrastructure and an inability at the moment to deliver energy and gas into the region. Andalas will start to solve some of those issues. So that in itself, there's a market there straight away. We already know that they will sell the gas on at a premium price. That is not in dispute. So if the structure of the company is correct and the company comes to market, it has the Tube Roby concession and other developments, then it's in a prime marketplace. And then Dave and the team are better placed than anyone we know currently to exploit that opportunity.
You're right. Listen, they've got the management. They've got the market there. You know, they're starting to get the assets, but they haven't got the listing. I'm just saying, come on, guys.
But I'll also go back to a point I made previously as well, in previous weeks. Paul Warwick is a pretty heavyweight director in the oil and gas arena. And with his reputation, I very much doubt he will have engaged himself with Andalas had he not seen the opportunity and obviously believed in the team around him. So, yeah, this is very much 11th hour. And, you know, a lot of investors I know are very nervous. I'm sure they are, quite rightly so. But at the end of the day, the proposition, to my mind, is still as exciting as it ever was.
Yes, I know. You are right. I don't think, you know, they're going to not go ahead with it the next 2 days. You know, like I said, I'm still, you know, my house is there. If they don't release in the next 2 days, I'll just call the bet off.
Okay, well, I'll eat my hat then. So you lose your house and I'll just eat the hat.
Well,
so
can we swap a sec? I prefer to eat the hat than rather than lose my house. Unless your house is the size of your hat is the size of a house, I could live in it. But I believe that, you know, like I said, I know there's a lot of admin and, you know, regulatory things you have to go through. I mean, I've talked with PR guys who've said, oh, can you do, you know, not for Andalas, but other companies, they said, can we get these guys in the podcast? And they said, oh, sorry, they've got a release coming. And then all of a sudden, they said, oh, it's going to be delayed. And it's like, because it goes back and forth, the release, the draft goes to the Nomad, to the broker, back to the company, they have to redraft it, goes back to them, but then they redraft it again. And so, by the time it goes back and forth, and people are sitting down, actually reading it, then adjusting it, you know, other than doing their other jobs, which they have to do, it does take a long, it's a long protracted process.
It's a long protracted process, and also it's a very complex process too. You know, it's not something that can be tied up very easily. There are lots of potential issues and ramifications if something isn't completed that have to be considered. So,
And if there's a loose end there somewhere, you know, someone will unpick it. And then they'll live it down for a long time, you know, so they'll have to live it down. So you know, it's got to be in tidy, neat, done professionally, properly, make sure all the dots are, you know, are dotted and the T's crossed, everything. Because, you know, people go through these RNSs with a fine-tooth comb. The last thing they want is people to pick them apart. So, you know, it has to be done regulatory, legally has to be done. So we know it takes a long time. It's probably taking longer than possible. But I think they'll pull out all the stops to get it done before, you know, end of play Friday, definitely, you know?
That's what I believe too, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Let's move on there. Let's hopefully next time I'm talking to you, Al, hopefully I'll still have a house.
and I won't be suffering indigestion from having it in the hat, no.
Yeah. Okay, so what else are you looking at, Al?
Okay, well, two things today. Firstly, I'm going to mention a new website, which
Keep it clean.
It's got a very memorable name, blackcabbytrader.com.
Okay.
Now, that's as it reads, blackcabbytrader. Now, this is the website of John Walsh, who many people who watch Tip TV will have seen John and his trading system. And it's a fantastic story. He entered a City Index trading competition in 2012, selected from 2,000 people, whittled down to about 20, I believe. And John went on and won the competition and the £100,000 cash prize.
Nice.
Since then, he's developed a rule-based trading system. And because he drives a cab, for this and also for other reasons concerning the market, he's selected to trade US stocks only. One of the main reasons being in the market, he says that the U.S. market is more consistent in terms of its reaction and response to geopolitical events, and the amount of information that's out there in the public domain from any stocks listed is absolutely huge.
Yeah. So
the website's launched. We've signed up numerous subscribers already, which is very encouraging. And John's, it's a two-tier system. He has a blog called Rootmaster. Obviously, we've got the old cabbie terminology there. We've got Rootmaster, which he publishes ideas, thoughts, and various other bits and pieces every day. And then there's an area of the site called The Knowledge, which is where members can pay £18 a month, and they can access John's trade stops and forecasts in real time. So without much further ado, I've done a bit of fundamental research on one of the stocks that he's actually picked out today, which is on the Rootmaster blog today, and that is of course a well-known company called Procter & Gamble. Mm-hmm. Procter & Gamble, Cincinnati-based, huge $76 billion company. The stocks on the year have been as low as $65, as high as $85, which is where they are now, which might give you some hint as to John's trading system, where he tends to look at stocks trading at year highs and pushing a consistent charting performance over a period of time. And if we go to the chart, indeed, Procter & Gamble is fulfilling some of this criteria, but he has a series of scans that he applies to the stock and looks at it that way. Of course, Procter & Gamble, well known for brands such as Tide, Crest, Head & Shoulders, Pantene, Gillette, and so on. But this is, John has picked out this stock for different reasons. It's purely because of the rule-based system that he uses, and the chart has basically ticked a number of boxes in that area, and that could well become a trade of his in the coming days. So that's really what I wanted to bring.
Well, do you know what? I did a search for blackcabbytrader.com, and yep. Good for you, Al. Your website comes up, which is branduk.net, and yes. So that's good Google search there. Good metadata you got in there. Yep. But you can read this stuff there about him and John, and click the link to his page. So that's good. So why does he still, if he's doing well, why does he still drive a cab?
Well, he drives a cab because that's his main source of living. But he's wanted for some time to become a full-time professional trader, and it's a transition process. I dare say in a few months' time he'll no longer be driving the cab. Although, frankly, I'm traveling out to London tomorrow. We're spending a few hours together, and he's going to pick me up in the cab from Victoria Station, which is very nice of him indeed. So
nice. Yeah, well, we'll have to get him on. We'll arrange a date to get him on. He can talk about some things there. So, I've often had a couple of people say, do you ever cover, US stocks in the podcast? Yep. And up until now, I haven't really, so we'll cover that off. Marvellous. All right, Al. We'll get John. I haven't seen him on Tip TV. I'll have to look at those links on this. If you go to your site, there's some clips there as well on his side.
If you go to the blackcabbytrader.com website, under Press Centre, there are loads of TV clips you can see. There's also
on the BBC. He's been on Mail Online. Yeah, he's
got a very good profile, John. Very good indeed, yeah. So
marvellous. All right. Okay. And have you got any more final stocks you want to mention?
Well, I have. It's a stock we mentioned before and discussed, and there was a note out on it over the past week as well from a broker. It's Tertiary Minerals. The epic code is TYM. Now, this is an AIM-traded stock, and listeners may well recall this is a company that mines fluorspar. And fluorspar is classed as one of the critical minerals by the European Commission. It's one of the 20 raw materials if there were a shortage, it would create an economic crisis.
Yeah, so it's the stuff they put in toothpaste, isn't it?
Toothpaste. It's used in flux where metal is smelted. It's used in production of glass. It has a multitude of applications. So because of that, it's important in so many areas. That's why it's classed as a critical.
Oh no, hang on, that's fluoride.
Fluoride. It's a derivative of that anyway. Fluoride.
Oh, cool. All right, good. I was having a joke, and then it turns out that's true. Yeah, there we are. Okay, I didn't know about this. And you know what? I got the man on there. What's the guy's name from Tertiary? I had him on.
Richard Clemmy.
Yeah, Richard Clemmy, nice fella. And I looked at the chart at the time, and I thought, oh, that could do a bounce about now. And one of those things you put in the back burner, And before you know it, it's jumped. And it was at one pence, I think, when they came on. And now it's at 2.13. It's doubled in price. But it's still looking nice. It's testing that high. It's come back again, retested it. And like I said, you know, technically it's looking nice. So the price is now flirting with the 200-day moving average, which is nice. Yep. So it looks like it could, you know, power on from here, you know?
Well, that's it. We've got the two projects, the MB project in Nevada and the Storuman project in Sweden. There's also the Lassedalen project as well in Norway. But both of these are progressing. But what I think the main points to come out of this broker note was that although the fluorspar prices are at five-year lows, one of the great things about tertiary is it manages its cost very tightly. And just for instance, on the remuneration front from the directors, they have a management agreement with Sunrise Resources that Sunrise reimburses tertiary for its office costs or a portion of its office costs. So as a result, the remuneration package is one of the lowest on AIM for the directors. So okay. that's a solid issue. But from the valuation of the mine, from the JORC estimates for all the resources combined, Beaufort Securities have calculated a $26.5 million valuation, which is 19.5 million sterling, which equates to 9p per share. So, of course, that's some way ahead of where we are now. I'm not saying the price is going to fly up there straight away, but given its performance over the past few months, given the fact that we've now moved from 1p to 2p, we're consolidating around this region, I think there's every chance that it's going to gradually move back towards that level. And clearly, if there are any other fundamental developments in the meantime, they will most likely act as a catalyst to push the price on higher.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what's nice? I typed in there in Google, how much is fluorspar worth, you know? And one of the top links comes up there is tertiary minerals, which that proves, you know, they are, you know, like I said, I don't know anyone else listed who does this. I don't know all the stocks on the stock market, of course, but I know China's a big creator of this fluorspar, or a producer. It just shows in the Western world, tertiary minerals there for a small company, you know, one of the who's in this area, you know?
Well, that's the thing, and I think I mentioned when I spoke before that it's attractive because on the basis of the fact that it's one of the few producers, it offers, as a mining stock, it offers some really good defensive qualities. So because it's, as one of the few producers, it's got the resources, it's got everything in place, and therefore, really, if there is further downside, and of course, you know, stocks do go down as well as up, we know that, but the downside from here is very limited, whereas I think the upside is potentially quite considerable.
Yeah, okay. And listen, please do your own research, everyone who listens to the podcast.
Please do your own research. Yeah.
These are investment ideas. Some ideas are amazing, some can be average, some can lose you money. You never know, but it's down to you to do your own research. Marvellous. Cheers, Al, and let's hope next time we speak, you'll still have a hat, I'll still have a house.
I hope so, Just. I'm hanging on to it tight at the moment.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Rosier, a full-time investor, writer, and ex-fund manager. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Your first time, John?
It is my first time, yep. First time doing a podcast.
Yeah, well, thanks for getting in touch, because I'm always after guys who know this stuff, who've been, you know, in the market for several years. And, you know, it's just good to talk to, you know, fellow investors, really. So it's nice to have you on. So first and foremost, let's look at a bit about your career there. So you were in the city for how many years?
Well, I joined in 84, and I was 25 years in the city altogether.
Yeah, and doing what were you doing there?
Well, mainly managing large UK equity portfolios for local authorities, sort of final salary pension schemes, and also big corporates. So large portfolios, but generally portfolios that, you know, they had a target of maybe FTSE All Share plus 1.5% a year. So sort of fairly low risk stuff. Compared to the index, so very different from what I'm doing today, where really all I'm trying to do is make money.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose you, in the fund game there, you're after so that steady, gradual return. And were you under a lot of pressure? I mean, life of a fund manager, is it, you know, pressurized?
It's like all those things. When it's going well, it's great fun.
Yeah.
When it's going, you know, when you're having a difficult patch, maybe a bit behind the index and things, then, you know, you go along to trustee meetings and, you know, obviously they're going to put you under a bit of pressure. They want to make sure that, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to make sure they've still got confidence in you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you're going to bounce back.
And do you ever feel, when you had those meetings, do you ever feel, you know, that the pressure there to actually, did it ever change your strategy or your thought? I mean, because if you're going through a rough patch and it's maybe just, you know, the stocks you hold rather than just the market, I mean, do you tend to rethink the way you're doing things?
I don't think so, no. I mean, generally, I mean, you know, there's a lot talked about short-termism. I mean, a lot of these things were sort of on rolling three-year mandates. Mm. So, you know, you weren't normally going to be under pressure if you had a, you know, bad couple of quarters or so. But, you know, a bad year put the pressure on for the second year. And if you had two bad years, then you've got to have a pretty good sort of explanation for why you haven't beaten the index, why you haven't basically achieved your mandate, and you know, why it's going to get better in the next year.
Yeah.
But you know, I wouldn't necessarily change my approach to investing. No.
Okay. So when did you leave? What year and why?
Okay, I left in 99. 2009. And basically my last job at the place, they got taken over and the new managers weren't interested in fund management. So basically I had to close this thing down. And then I thought I'd take a bit of time out. I did zoology at university.
All right.
And I went off for a month in South Africa doing a conservation sort of course up in up near the Mozambique border, and I came back. I think my wife thought I'd come back from that and you know, I'd be straight back to the city, but I sort of thought I've been 25 years in the city, I wanted to try and do something else, and so I thought I'll try and manage money from home. So I started doing that. Enjoyed that, but then thought about setting up a website. So I did that early in 2012. So that was a new skill. So
yeah, and I like the name. I do like the name of your website because it's a little bit cheeky there. Because I like it. So what is it called again?
It's called johnsinvestmentchronicle.com.
Nice.
And the strap line's the investment diary of a private investor. So
and that's very much what you do for Investors Chronicle, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so you, I mean, I'm assuming you've been 25 years in the city and you've built up a nice little nest egg there because, I, you know, if the rumors are true, fund managers get paid a pretty penny, don't they?
Yes, I guess over the years you do. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep,
and
so that helps.
Yeah. And so you decided to go alone, full time investing, and so what do you? I mean, you know, how many stocks do you have at the moment? Do you have different portfolios, different things? What do you do? What's your strategy?
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, basically, I run one portfolio, really.
Oh, okay.
You know, I've got an ISA and dealing, but I mean, basically, I combine it all, so it's sort of one portfolio in the way that I look at it. I sort of tend to have between 20-25 holdings, never more than 30.
Okay.
My current holding, currently I'm on, 28 holdings, 27, 28 holdings. I get a little bit of diversification by investing in a few investment trusts.
Yeah.
So, you know, one very successful holding for me this year, well, over the last few years, has been Baillie Gifford Shin Nippon, which is Japanese smaller companies. It's performed very well. So, you know, I've got a bit of overseas exposure through investment trusts or thematic even. You know, I've held Biotech Growth Trust for the last 5 years, which has done me very well as well. So,
okay,
basically where I haven't got the expertise to pick the stocks myself.
Yeah. And it's an interesting one, the Japanese smaller companies done well, because I know they've had some awful trade figures out, and just recently they have as well. But so the small companies seem to be doing well there. So,
well, they'll probably do better because they'll probably be slightly more domestically orientated.
Yeah,
You know, rather than export.
Yes.
And so, you know, that helps.
Okay, so now the stocks. How many sort of individual stocks do you hold?
Okay, so I've got around 20 individual stocks.
Yeah.
They vary from, but I mean, mostly they're FTSE small cap, AIM, and FTSE 250. I mean, I've got a few FTSE 100s, Dixon's, Carphone, EasyJet. You know, I've held those for some time. But then there's two in the FTSE 250, Interserve, Worldwide Healthcare. And then the rest are all sort of AIM and small cap.
Yeah, and so why, I mean, obviously the big caps there, do you hold those particularly just for dividends or what?
Not really. I mean, I'll tell you, you know, I bought EasyJet. I mean, I've got the exact figure here. I bought it in January 12. And, you know, when I bought that, the stock was down at, well, I paid, here we go, 408.
Oh, nice. And even now they're taking a bit of a hammer in, but they're still at 14 quid and 67 pence. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they got up to, what, nearly 20.
Yeah.
But they're down at this level. But, you know, down at this level, there's a pretty good dividend yield on them.
Yeah, cool.
You know, you're looking at, over 4%.
Yeah. So when you're looking at a company, you know, you're doing your research there, what essentially do you look at? If you could pin it down to, you know, the top, say, three most important things you look at, what initially do you look at? Is it the price? Is it what, earnings? What do you look at?
I think, okay, I would say that I'm a value growth man.
Yeah.
So basically, I want stocks that are growing the top line. But cash flow is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Balance sheet's very, I mean, three things. Decent cash flow, not too much debt, and then valuation.
Yeah.
So they're the sort of three things. And, you know, some people describe themselves as sort of GARP, growth at the right price. But to me, that means you can justify anything because what's the right price?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't like buying very highly valued things because if there's a shock, you get hit twice. You get the earnings hit and then the devaluation hit.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. That's always something to point out. If you've got a company like... you know, on a P of, well, in fact, like, it springs to mind, it's like ASOS or ASOS, whatever it's called. But I mean, you know, they've always traded on like 60 PE or something ridiculous. And so if they ever missed, you know, like a guidance, then they do take a massive hit. But likely they do, you know, grow back up quickly. I mean, the share price sort of rebounds quickly, but it can be very volatile, can't it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, ASOS, you know, that, I mean, as you say, a great stock. We've all got our ASOS stories. So I won't go through that one.
Yeah, in fact, name a stock you've had that's, you know, outperformed and you thought, wow, I didn't expect that to, you know, and you've held on to it. What, can you think of one off the top of your head? I didn't, you know, ask you beforehand, but can you think of a stock that's done really well over the last few years and you've held on?
Okay, the best, I think probably my best, there's two stocks. Let's just go for one, Crawshaw.
Yeah.
Crawshaw, I bought that here. I've got the exact date.
What's the ticker on Crawshaw?
It's C-R-A-W.
Craw, it makes sense. Okay, at 73 pence, 73 and a half pence at the moment, I'm seeing. So, when did you get into those?
Okay, I got into that. Luckily enough, I had a nice opportunity to meet the management.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of 2000 and here we are, I've got the purchase price. So I met them at November 13.
Yeah.
And I got in at 12 pence.
Wow, that's nice. So it was November 2013, you say, yeah?
November 13. 22nd of November 13, I bought them. And then I managed to add, I then added in December.
That's nice.
At about 16p.
Yes.
And then, you know, I don't mind giving holdings a bit of a haircut if they get overdone.
Yeah.
And then, because it also gives you an opportunity to, you know, to buy back if they drop back a bit. But I mean, I tend to, you know, if I do that, it might be 20% of the holding or something.
Yeah.
So I did trade around a bit. You know, I sold out some in July 14 when it got up to around 66p.
Okay. So what do they do, Crawshaw?
Well, Crawshaw, they basically are a sort of northern... based butcher's chain.
Ah, yes.
But it's not just butchers. I mean, half the business, half the sales is sort of hot prepared food. So you might go in there and buy a chicken pie or something like that.
Yeah.
Basically, it's sort of good value meat, but at a decent discount to what you pay in the supermarkets.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And so you say you hold quite a lot of AIM companies, and you mentioned there you actually cash flow. I mean, is that a strict criteria, or if you see potential in a company that hasn't got any cash flow, like an exploration company, for example, would you just not entertain that?
I get quite worried about. I mean, things that I have made money in the past out of some exploration companies. I tend to, when I've done it before. I mean, I made good money a few years back in Cove Energy, but I got into that after it had become sort of less speculative. Once it had found some money or some gas offshore Mozambique, I mean, the share price obviously moved up because they'd announced a discovery, but then that gave me more confidence that they were actually drilling in an area where clearly there was gas. So I was then happy to buy that.
Okay.
You know, I've had too many where you know, in the past, and I guess I've learned from experience, where they've not delivered.
Exactly. Okay.
So I like to be slightly more, I guess, you know, slightly more
discerning,
over the
cash flow. Okay, well, let's look at a couple of stocks maybe you're looking at the moment you think is quite interesting. What are you looking at?
Okay, well, I've chosen two. I mean, I do hold both of these, so I've got to be clear on that. But I've chosen two where, you know, I'm hoping that news in the next week or few weeks will get them moving.
Okay.
So one of them is Character Group, which is CCT. Is the ticker for that.
Yeah.
That's around 110 million market cap. And basically, this company, it sort of designs and develops, distributes toys and games, gifts, etc. And basically, what happens is the online, the people who own the brand license them to make toys. And we're talking about things like Fireman Sam and Postman Pat, Peppa Pig, you know, Doctor Who, all our favourites. So they'll then make maybe cuddly toys and things like that. And then they, as I say, they distribute them internationally.
Yeah, do you know, I heard of a Character Group years ago, and there was always a promise. But I mean, if you look at the share price, I mean, you know, from essentially, I suppose, not good years, but from, you know, February 2011, up until about pretty much, you know, 2013, towards the end of 2013, didn't do anything. Went between £2 and 150, below 120.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, explosion. Almost, you know, up to £5, you know?
Yeah, it got going in 2013, in August 13. And that, I think basically that because, you know, the results really started to come through. You know, you started to see revenue growing decently, having it actually dropped off, but also, you know, the profit growth really coming through and the cash flow coming through. And certainly in the last, you know, in the year ended August 15, there was big growth in earnings, up 80-odd%. And the dividend growth being pushed ahead. But, you know, in the last, what, I guess, seven, eight months or so, it's traded pretty much in a pretty narrow range. You know, sort of 470 up to 520. And I'm rather hoping that interim results next Wednesday, I think they are, will help them break out of that. I think that, you know, I think the valuation looks pretty cheap.
Okay, all right, marvellous stuff. All right, that's Character Group, marvellous. And anything else you're looking at the moment? Quite interesting.
Well, the other one is Conviviality, which I bought last year. I mean, this came to the market in 2013.
CVR, isn't it, ticker there?
That's right, yeah. CVR. And they are basically they own loads of franchises. In the, you know, just in the wholesale sort of drinks, basically. And last year they bought you know, some of their names that they own. But last year, the big deal they did was they bought Matthew Clark, who are basically, again, a distributor of drink.
Yeah.
And that I think has given them enormous opportunity, because I mean, it was sort of sold. The deal was sold on the basis mainly of all the cost saving they could put through.
Yeah.
But I think there's also a lot of revenue that's going to benefits of them come through from that. And it really transformed it, because this was a £200 million acquisition.
Mm.
Which they funded 130 million through shares at 150p and the rest through debt.
Okay.
But with this one, again, it's the growth rate is pretty good, and the valuation, I think, looks cheap, and it is generating a lot of cash, so that debt should come down very quickly.
Yeah. It's interesting to see that you are, like you said, you hold a lot of stocks in the smaller, in the alternative investment market, because you think being a fund manager, mainly looking at big stocks, that is your hunting ground, you're familiar with that. But so why have you chosen to go to AIM, predominantly?
Well, I think there's, AIM has a bad name with some people and things, but I think there's a lot of good stocks in there.
Yeah.
There are plenty of stocks with decent balance sheets, decent sort of franchises, and good growth prospects. You look at Conviviality here. It's got a dividend yield of 4.1% going forward, generating lots of cash. I just think you can find stocks with greater growth prospects
exactly.
than you can in the FTSE 100. That doesn't say you should ignore the FTSE 100.
Yeah.
As I say, I've talked about EasyJet that's done well, and Dixon's Carphone, where I've made a lot of money over the last 4 years.
Yeah, cool. All right, marvellous, John. Well, listen, thanks for coming on, and listen, please do come on again soon.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, today's stock with potential is suggested by Dave. All right, Dave Smith. Thanks, Dave, for getting involved. I do appreciate it. You are the fuel that keeps this fire burning as far as stocks with potential is concerned. Dave suggests Red Emperor Resources. What does the company do? It's an oil and gas exploration company. How many shares does the company have in issue? 425 million. And for a small cap, I like to see shares under a billion. Some people don't care. I do. What is the company's current price to market cap? 1.2 pence, 5 million market cap. How much cash or debt does the company have? 6.4 million in cash, no debt. I just checked, actually. And it's $12 million. That was end of year, 31st of, or half yearly report, 31st December. So $12 million they had there. Only 5 million market cap. Eh? Let's see reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, 6.4 million in cash. Yeah. With no debt and low overheads. Number two, seeking new ventures to expand the portfolio. Number three, management have a proven track record at creating value. So that's Red Emperor Resources. I put it on my watch list. I put an upper price limit of 1.5 and a lower price limit of, I think, 1 pence to alert me when it hits either one of those. So, do your own research on this. But, I did check the balance sheet, because I couldn't believe the amount of cash they had compared to the market cap. So that's Red Emperor's RMP ticker. And my review, my 5-star review, who I dedicate this podcast to, the entire podcast, goes out to David Horton. It's a podcast of Dave's today. And Dave's, the title of the review is 5-star. So Dave says, a great podcast, now part of daily routine without fail, informative and Saturday podcast, normally amusing. Thanks for that. What more could you ask for? Exactly, Dave. David, sorry. So I do appreciate that. And listen, if you could do that, give me a review on iTunes. I'm more than appreciative of that. And like I said, it does help with everything. This podcast is growing in numbers. And the more numbers we get, the more numbers it's exponential. So please help make it a success. And when this is super huge, when it's the biggest thing on the internet, you could say, I listened to that when he had 2 or 3 listeners. And I give him a review. Check it out. So I appreciate that. Thanks for listening. There's more tomorrow. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.